What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Okay, hello everybody, welcome back. Just a little follow-up, because if you're not on our Patreon, I don't think we talked about the Adnan Syed news on the regular podcast. I feel like we only talked about it on Patreon.
Yeah.
So in case you missed it, a motion to vacate Adnan Syed's conviction has been filed by the prosecution in the case, which is huge.
Wild.
If you don't know this case, it's the murder of Haman Lee. The podcast Serial is like what popularized it, and honestly what popularized true crime podcasts and like podcasts in general. Most of you guys have probably listened to it. There's also an amazing podcast called Undisclosed that have done a really like in-depth look at the Adnan Syed case.
Ooh.
So highly recommend listening to both of those if you haven't. But a lot of people believe that Adnan Syed is not guilty, yet he has been in jail for the last
20
years. Over 20 years.
Yeah,
right?
Over 20 years, because it was 99 when her murder took place.
Yeah, so long time. And they were conducting a review. Both the defense and prosecution were working together, reviewing the case and the trial and all of that. And basically, they came to the conclusion that there were two suspects that the prosecution knew about that could be involved, and they did not tell the defense. So that's a big issue, because they have to tell the defense about that kind of thing. You know, in court, there's all these legal terms that I'm not going to get into here, but you have to tell them. So because of that, the prosecution has filed a motion to vacate his conviction. This does not mean that he is found innocent. It's just that he deserves a new trial.
Right.
Is basically what they're saying. So today, when you're listening to this episode, Monday is when they're supposedly meeting to decide if he's going to be released while, you know, the retrial is being put together. So,
oh, it's so crazy. I'm like,
it is so huge. So I don't know if we've ever talked about this case on the podcast before. Andrea is fully in the camp of he's innocent.
Yeah.
I am like, I'm like 80-20.
Yeah.
I'm like 80% he's innocent, 20% not that he's guilty, I'm just unsure.
Unsure,
like, I can't 100% say I
rule
totally think he's innocent.
Yeah.
But I do think he did not get a fair trial. So no matter what, if he's innocent or guilty, he did not get a fair trial. And so I'm really happy that this is happening. And it's just going to be crazy, because who knows if they're ever even going to be able to find, like, a jury. Like, how are they even going to find a jury? I mean, I'm sure there's people who don't know the case, but still, it's
get a bunch of older people.
Hard.
Well, I don't know if that's a good idea either, because, you know, he got kind of racially profiled because he is, he's Muslim. He's, I can't remember where he's from. Shoot, it's like slipping my mind.
Yeah, me too.
Somewhere.
It's been a while since
I think it's in the Middle East, though, I'm pretty sure, somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, so maybe the older population might not be the best option either.
Yeah. But yeah, they're going to have to, it's going to be a whole thing, but I'm really happy he's getting a fair trial.
Yeah.
We'll keep you guys updated on, I mean, we'll update on the podcast when there's big news. But be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, because we update on there more regularly. So, like, when something comes out, we'll update on there right away. So be sure to follow us there, because sometimes we record ahead of time. Some days, like today, it's less than 24 hours before the episode goes live. But other times we do record ahead of time, so we can't always, like, update right when news happens. So, yeah, just wanted to share that little true crime news before we get into today's case. And today we are going to be talking about a technically unsolved Welsh double homicide.
Ooh.
So I actually discovered this case while doing research for our September Patreon bonus episode that was about a Welsh serial killer. So that man was looked into for his possible involvement in this case. So if you want to hear his whole backstory, you can go check out our Great Humans Patreon tier to listen. The link is always in our show notes and our Instagram bio and all of that. But that being said, you don't have to know that whole story to listen to this one, because while that serial killer has been connected in several media outlets, I and a lot of people do not believe he is responsible for this double homicide. So you don't have to know that whole story. It's just, if it might interest you, that's where you can listen to it.
And shout out to Sharna for suggesting the original case. So now you know about this one.
Yeah. And it's crazy. I can't believe I'd never heard of this. So
I know.
This case is actually known as one of Wales' most notorious unsolved cases.
Damn.
So let's get into it. Harry and Megan Tews lived on a remote farm just north of Llanherry in South Wales, in the United Kingdom. And they lived at Tiariwan Farm. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that right. I did my best. But it was a relatively remote farm just outside of Bridgend. And their farm, this farm was 10 acres. It had been in Megan's family for over a century. And Harry and Megan took over the farm, I think, when they got married. Wow. So they enjoyed keeping up the farm. It was a lot of work, but they really enjoyed it. And it was just what they were used to and what they did. The Tews had one daughter, Cheryl. And when she grew up, she decided to move away from the farm. She wasn't really into that lifestyle. She didn't want to, like, continue that up. So she moved away when she was an adult.
Okay.
Now, Harry was well known in the community through his market garden business. So he had grown all types of things at the farm and sold them at a market. But in 1986, he had retired, deciding to spend his extra time continuing to grow cabbages, but otherwise living a pretty uneventful life.
Okay.
In 1992, his shotgun was actually mysteriously stolen from the farm. Oh. But other than that, nothing happened at their remote home. They lived a totally normal life. Everything was just normal.
Okay.
And the morning of Monday, July 26, 1993, was a completely normal day for the Tews. 64-year-old Harry and 67-year-old Megan went into town to collect their pension and shop at the local Tesco. This is something they did all the time. People knew their routine and were used to it. There, at the Tesco, Harry ran into one of his sisters, who later reported noticing nothing off about her brother and his wife. They returned back to their farm that morning by 11 a.m., as reported by a neighbor who was leaving her house. That day was completely normal. At 1:30 p.m., two gunshots fired 30 seconds apart were heard by the neighbors coming from their farm. However, this was not unusual because they knew that Harry would shoot at rabbits who were eating his cabbage.
Oh,
they didn't find this. I know that made me really sad, but like no. He had to protect his crop, I guess.
Yeah, I get
and
that.
And so the neighbors didn't think that this was weird hearing these shotguns shots.
And it's a farm. I mean, people might just shoot for the hell of it too.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't weird at all.
Yeah.
Harry and Megan's daughter, Cheryl, who lived in Orpington, Kent with her boyfriend or fiance, depending on the source, but I more often saw boyfriend, so that's what I'm gonna go with.
Okay.
She called her parents around 3 p.m., but they didn't answer. And at first, she wasn't too worried, but she called again that evening and they still did not answer. So she started to become concerned, and Cheryl alerted one of her parents' neighbors, a farmer named Owen Hopkins. It was just really unusual for them to not answer the phone, and she was concerned. So Hopkins went over to the Tews' property and found it, quote, bizarrely empty with the door unlocked.
Mm.
The couple's car was still there and no one had seen them leave, but they were nowhere in sight. Hopkins found a pan of chopped potatoes that looked like they were like ready to be cooked sitting on the stove. And it just kind of seemed like the house had just been abandoned.
But
their car was still there. Yeah.
They vanished.
Gone.
Okay.
Yeah. So this was very strange and concerned. Hopkins called the South Wales Police Department. When the police arrived at Harry and Megan's farm on the evening of July 26th, they also found the scene bizarre. Again, Harry and Megan were nowhere in the house, and there wasn't anything very unusual about the house. There was no sign of any forced entry or robbery, but the Tews were nowhere inside. They did find the couple's best china set at the table for lunch, and police later learned that that china was only used when an important visitor came. Mm. So that was a little bit like suspicious.
And a clue.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said, the lunch had been sitting on the stove, like ready to be cooked, and the china was all undisturbed as if it hadn't been used. There were three teacups out, and one was known to be Harry's, one Megan's, and then another was like one of these from the china that would be like for a special guest.
Okay.
Police started to search the property when they found no sign of Harry or Megan inside. And by this point, it was the early morning hours of July 27th. When they entered a cow shed on the property next to the home, they found a horrific scene.
Oh, no.
Both Harry and Megan's bodies were inside the shed. They were covered in carpet under hay bales. They had both been shot execution style in the back of the head at point blank range with a shotgun.
Oh, my gosh.
So this went from a welfare check to a double homicide investigation like that.
Split second, yeah.
So police believed at first that because there was no sign of forced entry, Harry and Megan may have known their killer. So this was reinforced by the fact that, you know, the stove had been turned off. So police believed that the person had stopped by unannounced in the middle of them making their lunch.
Mm-hmm.
That would explain the three teacups and the nice china set out.
Right.
Forensic ballistics analysis found that Harry had been shot just inside the door of the cow shed, and he was then placed inside, covered with hay and sheets. But it's believed that Megan may have been trying to escape because she was shot inside the farmhouse, possibly near the kitchen.
Okay.
So she was then placed in the cow shed and covered with a carpet. And later analysis determined that Harry was likely moved 3 to 4 hours after he died, while Megan likely died later than Harry. So other than that, we don't really know, like, what exactly happened. They never really share any more details. But if I had to put that together, I would say that, like, somebody shot Harry in the cow shed and then went back, shot Megan, or, you know, did something and then shot Megan.
Right. So when the police arrived, they didn't notice anything in the kitchen, like any DNA or not DNA, blood,
no,
evidence or anything. Okay. So they cleaned up, I guess, maybe.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
So police did discover that the shotgun used to murder Harry and Megan was not the gun that had been stolen from Harry years prior, but the murder weapon could not be found. Like I said, no sign of a robbery, nothing had been taken from the house, including valuable jewelry and money that was inside the house and on Harry.
Mm.
Now, while police were investigating, there were not many clues. But pretty quickly, one suspect emerged. Cheryl Tu's boyfriend, 33-year-old Jonathan Jones.
Oh, shit.
So Cheryl had met Jonathan Jones 8 years prior. They met at a business studies course, and in 1986, when Cheryl moved out, the two had actually moved in together without her parents knowing. And apparently her parents were very religious and did not believe in living together before marriage. So when Cheryl moved away, they were already, you know, sad that their daughter was moving away.
Right.
And then when they learned that she was living with her boyfriend, they were upset. However, other sources say that Harry and Megan were close with Cheryl and Jonathan and that they were fond of him. So what I'm thinking is they were upset at first, but then, you know, it had been like 7 years since that happened. So they probably like accepted it and grew closer with them.
Okay.
However, Jonathan Jones was not doing well financially in 1993. He had tried to start his own marketing business, but he had only 100 pounds in his bank account. He was falling behind on the couple's house payments, and they were about to lose their apartment, but he kept that hidden from Cheryl.
Oh, no.
So these financial troubles became a possible motive. Harry and Megan had a 150-pound life insurance policy, and investigators believe that that could have given Jones a motive to murder them.
I mean, that's pretty fucked up, but yeah.
Yeah, and Jones knew that Cheryl was the sole beneficiary of her parents' estate, so he knew that she would be making that money. Witnesses who had seen a man walking along a road near the Tu's farm in late June before the murders came forward after the murders and identified Jones as the man that they had seen. But Jones claimed that he had been there baling hay with Harry, so he said, you know, it's not weird for someone to see me because I was around there.
Yeah.
Now, Jones' alibi for the day of the murders was shaky at best. Mm-hmm. He said he had met with estate agents looking for a new office space for his marketing business that he was starting, but no witnesses or estate agents could confirm his alibi. In addition to that, the distance between where he said he was that day and morning and the farm was a maximum of 7 hours, so he could have made it there and back within that day.
Right.
Jones also claimed that he had a conversation with a worker at his apartment at 1:30 p.m. the day of the murders, but the worker said that at that time he was out for lunch and that he never had a conversation with Jones. Cheryl later told police that Jones was not at home when she got home from work that evening and that she couldn't tell if he had been there during the day. That evening, when Cheryl was concerned for her that her parents had not answered the phone, she had asked her boyfriend to drive the 200 miles to check up on them. So she had work the following morning, so she didn't have time to get there and back before work. So right. She asked him to, and he left around 10 or 11 p.m., but he did not arrive until 3 a.m. When he got there, he found the police at the home, and they told him that Harry and Megan had been found murdered. Mm-hmm. So police quickly became suspicious of Jones at the crime scene that morning because, first of all, his reaction to learning about the murders was strange, according to them.
Okay.
They were also suspicious of the length of time it took him to get to the farm because it's a lot longer than it should have taken if he just drove straight there.
Right.
So he had claimed to Cheryl that the weather had slowed him down, but police believed that he had taken a detour to dispose of clothing and the murder weapon. And then forensic evidence pointed at him even further. So his fingerprint was found on that third teacup that was set out in the home that day. There were no other fingerprints other than Harry and Megan that were found on any of the cups.
But to play devil's advocate, he was their soon-to-be son-in-law. He was there that day helping do the hay bales. Like, it could have been that.
Both Cheryl and Jones claimed, and I think this was before they knew that
the fingerprints
were on the cup, but they claimed that he had never used that teacup.
Oh, okay.
He did claim, though, that when he and Cheryl got to the house after the murders were discovered and they were going through the house with police, that he grabbed the teacup. So it's unclear what the truth is here.
Yeah.
But definitely a little fishy.
Yeah.
So the investigation went on, but other than Jones, no suspects emerged. And police could still not find a murder weapon, a motive, or any other clues in the case. And then, 2 months after Harry and Megan's murders, Jonathan Jones was arrested and charged with the crime.
Oh, damn.
At trial, police theorized that he had surprised Harry and Megan while they were making their lunch that day. They think that Harry and Meghan possibly believed that Jones was going to ask them to marry their daughter. So that's why they got out the nice china and made some tea. And, like, you know, there's no sign of forced entry, obviously, because they knew him, all of that. Jones' defense consisted of trying to verify his shaky alibi, which his lawyers could find no one to do. So not a single person that Jones claimed to see, the agent, the worker at his apartment, no one could come forward and say that they met with him that day and confirm his whereabouts.
That's not good.
No. Like, if you don't have an alibi, say you don't have an... If you're innocent and just you don't have an alibi, just say that. Don't try to make up an alibi because that looks even worse.
Yeah, because chances are people are not going to lie for you for a murder investigation.
Yeah, especially when it's not... I mean, not that I would... Sorry, I wouldn't lie for you in a murder investigation, Andrea.
No,
I wouldn't
don't.
Lie for anyone. But especially when it's not, like, people that are, like, not even related
super
to
close.
You, don't know you. Like, yeah. So after 2 hours of jury deliberation, they found Jonathan Jones guilty of murder.
Damn.
He was sentenced to 2 life sentences, with the judge saying, quote, "It was the planned and pitiless execution of a harmless couple who should have had nothing from you except your affection and respect." Mm-hmm. So he was going to jail.
Yeah.
But if you remember, I said this was one of Wales' most notorious unsolved cases. Yep.
I was waiting for it. I was like, where is this going to go?
Yep. So Jones worked quickly to appeal his conviction. Now, Cheryl did not believe that he had killed her parents, and she actually began offering a reward to the public for anybody that had information that could help clear his name.
Wow.
And this reward money came out of the life insurance money that she got.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's hers to use whatever she wants, but, you know. Cheryl's family and the public at the time were convinced that Jonathan was guilty and that the jury's decision was right. So they were like, girl, stop doing this. Her family was really upset with her. Like, they were like, he's guilty. But Jones pushed forward and he appealed his conviction. His attorneys were searching for different grounds to appeal, and most of it ended up being like very legal stuff, you know, like legal technicalities.
Right.
His team was also still trying to find proof that his alibi was solid. And again, they were unable to. And to this day, no one has ever confirmed his alibi. The Court of Appeal, though, overturned his conviction. They considered ordering a retrial, but they decided that it would be, quote, inappropriate. So he was released from prison, and he went on to marry Cheryl. They had a kid, and he has maintained his innocence to this day.
So was it because of the technicalities that they overturned it?
It was that, but also what I'll talk about in a second is potential evidence that they brought up that basically wasn't investigated. So they said you can't say that he did it if
based on that
you didn't investigate all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Also, I think the Welsh legal system is a little bit different from America, because I feel like in America, at least nowadays, it wouldn't have been overturned just for that, or it could have been overturned, but a retrial would have happened. Right. Like, that's what I find strange about this, that they didn't order a retrial at all. So they basically said there wasn't enough evidence to prove that he did it.
So why waste our time and our resources?
Exactly.
I mean, that makes sense, honestly, because, I mean, unless you have a lot of new evidence to try a new case, like, what's...
Yeah, what are
you
going to
do? It's all circumstantial anyway. I mean, yeah, there's the fingerprint, but, I mean...
Yeah. There's not enough to say he for sure did it.
Right.
So, legally, though, this double homicide of Harry and Megan Tubbs was unsolved, and it remains unsolved to this day. Mm-hmm. So, the potential evidence in the case that was never followed up on includes a mysterious car seen near their farm, an unknown middle-aged man seen with the couple, and noisy arguments coming from their home.
Okay.
But in 1996, so this was the evidence that the Court of Appeals was like, okay, you didn't investigate this. This is some of the stuff that led to his conviction being overturned.
Right.
And then in 1996, after his conviction was overturned, the South Wales Police Department released a statement saying they were not planning to reopen the investigation.
What?
Yeah. So they were basically like, we're not going to look into any of this.
So we'll just leave their murder unsolved.
That's what it seemed like to the public. And of course, Jones, Cheryl, and the public were all appalled.
Yeah.
Because despite these potential leads being brought up, it seemed like they were not following up on those. But shortly after this, like, public outrage, the police issued a report that the case was not closed and that they would follow up on any new information that comes to light. So it kind of seemed like they were kind of like, I don't know, they like didn't want to look into that older information, whether... Yeah. It's because they claim that they already did, or because of some other unknown reason, we don't know. But they did come out and say, no, the case isn't closed. We're still investigating it. Like, new information that comes in, we will look into.
Okay.
In 2000, 7 years after the murders, Assistant Chief Constable announced a new review of the case, stating that, quote, he would leave no stone unturned. He said, quote, the conclusion of the report and its findings will be made known. Warts and all, the content of the report will be made available to the public. So he was like, okay, we're doing this. We're going to review it all and we'll make all of it known to the public.
Okay.
Those findings have still never been released. Mm-hmm. So the police are saying that since the murder is still unsolved, they can't release any potential key information.
Okay.
Which is fine.
Fair enough, like, yeah.
Yeah, I get it, but... don't say you're going to release it to the public and then never do it.
Right.
In 2003, it was being reported that barrels of a shotgun were found in an abandoned quarry near the farm. And apparently, the person that found them, for unknown reasons, painted the barrels white before they handed them over to the police.
White?
Yeah. And we have no clue why. And the barrels were taken away to be tested, but I couldn't find the results of that testing.
Okay.
Around the same time, police had reportedly also been given a bag found in a nearby iron ore mine that had two shotgun cartridges inside. And police referred to this evidence as a significant develop, but again, didn't elaborate anymore.
Okay.
They also noted that in 2002, they received an anonymous letter that was of interest. But that's all they would say about that. And again, we don't know what any of this means since it's still an ongoing investigation. They haven't released any of this. But this was in the early 2000s and still haven't released it. And there's been no real movement.
Right.
In 2006, 13 years after the murders, police began a search for two vehicles that witnesses had placed in Lanharry around the time of the murders. So this was a black 4x4 and a red saloon car. And they believe that these could have clues as to who committed the crime, but these vehicles have still never been identified. By 2008, the investigation into Harry and Meghan Tu's murders went cold. Now, in 2011, after Welsh serial killer John William Cooper was convicted of four murders in Pembrokeshire, Wales, the two's case was re-examined by police to look into a possible connection between their murders and Cooper. So there were similarities between his other killings and this case, including that a shotgun was used, that they were shot at close range, and that there were attempts made to hide their bodies. The biggest connection was that there were very few double shotgun murders that ever happened in Wales.
Yeah.
And Jones was already known to have committed two of them.
Right.
So they were like, what's the likelihood that another double shotgun murder happens and he's not connected?
Right.
However, Harry and Meghan would not have known John Cooper. There is no personal connection between them whatsoever. So it doesn't explain why their nice china was taken out or why there was no sign of forced entry. The biggest thing, in my opinion, that proves he was not the killer was that nothing was taken from their house. He always robbed his victims. That was his big MO. And the fact that there was nice jewelry in the house and even there was money on Harry. Like, right. At the very least, he could have taken that money.
Didn't he also keep trophies too? Or was that
he did.
Else? Okay.
No, he did. Okay. And there was nothing taken from the home or the bodies at all. So it doesn't make sense. He also would typically stick to areas that he knew, and he did not know Lanharry area at all.
But it's also so bizarre because how many people rob and kill with a shotgun? That's so crazy to me.
Yeah. But then again, if this is kind of more of like a farm area.
True.
I feel like more people might have shotguns. So
yeah, that's true.
So Jones' lawyer still tries to point at Cooper, saying that he's a better candidate for the murders than Jones. But many people at this point do not believe that Cooper was involved whatsoever. And some of the articles that I read were like, we need to move past looking at him being involved because he's not. And we're not looking at the facts and we're not making any progress into like actually solving this murder.
Right.
And still, Jonathan Jones remains free. He has been fighting to have the findings of the new reviews that have been done to be published, but authorities keep saying that they will not release the findings in the case that a future prosecution might happen. And whether Jones was responsible or it was someone else entirely, the twos still do not have justice. Mm-hmm. And that is it for the heartbreaking unsolved double murder of Harry and Meghan Twos. So their family is obviously still suffering, not knowing who did this to them. And they are doing everything they can to keep the case in the public eye so it will continue to get attention and so that Harry and Meghan can get the justice they deserve.
Yeah, it's awful.
If you know anything about the murders of Harry and Meghan Tews, you can contact the South Wales Police, and I will link their website that has all the contact numbers for international and if you're in Wales, and I'll link that in the show notes. This case just really bothers me because it's like, it could be completely random, but there were no other murders like this in the area.
Yeah.
And I go back and forth between if I think Jonathan Jones could be responsible. I really don't know. And it's just so frustrating because it's like, it's just unsolved. And that's just it. And there's no answers. And it doesn't even seem like there's potential for answers to ever come unless somebody confesses. But I'm a little bit hopeful because of all the evidence that they're keeping so close to the chest. Like, I'm hopeful that maybe they're still working on it, but it's just been so long.
Have they, I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but have they, you know, toyed around with the idea of a copycat? Like someone who may have been copying Cooper?
Yeah, I didn't read anything about that, but it definitely could have been. But I feel like then the person would have robbed them because that was like his very well-known MO.
True.
But yeah, that's all I have for you guys today. If you want all of the background and story about Cooper, be sure to check out our Patreon. And we will see you on Thursday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.